All right, we're live. We're doing this. This is happening right now. Hey, Marty McCary here. I'm here with Sanjula, and we have a special guest, actually one of our own now, we can claim, and that's George Tidmarsh. Great to see you, George. Welcome to the FDA. You're our new director of CDER, and we thought we would just pull you out of the office here and have a little conversation so people can get to know you.
Now, for our audience may not know what CDER stands for, it's probably important to clarify that's our Center for Drug Evaluation and Research. Yeah. Welcome, George.
Great. Welcome. Yeah. So great to have you. So you have, such an impressive resume, just impeccable credentials. And so we'll talk about that just for a quick second, but we want to get to know the man behind the credentials and a little bit about you and your story. You are coming from the faculty of Stanford University. You are trained in pediatrics and then dual board trained in pediatric oncology and neonatology.
That's correct.
So double trained. And then you've had an interesting career where you've been both academic and led, well, why don't you tell the story? You led a center at Stanford.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. Yeah, Stanford's been my home since I went there as an undergraduate in 1979. And I've been affiliated for most of the however many years, 40-some, 44 years since then. There was a short break, but I, as you said, I did my undergraduate in microbiology. I did my pediatric residency and, medical school PhD, pediatric residency, and then two fellowships. And that's a whole story in and of itself, how I ended up with two very disparate fellowships. As a physician, you would know how unrelated, seemingly, neonatology and pediatric oncology are, but they're both loves of mine. I stayed clinically active, but I got pulled into biotech by my PhD mentor, Irv Weissman. And I asked, hey, can I come back in the lab and do some work? And he said, hey, I'm starting a company. So that worked out pretty well, and I was clinically active for a number of years while I was in biotech. But yeah, it's been a great ride, and I just want to thank you all for welcoming me here in such a warm way. It's been really a fantastic day. I met with so many people, and what I told the staff within CDER today is that 30 years I've worked with FDA and as a sponsor, and I developed a real respect for the quality and integrity of the people at FDA, and that went up a magnitude today. Meeting with everybody.
Yeah, how was your first day? I know you met with the leadership at CDER. We met with Jacqueline Corrigan Curry, who's just been outstanding and has been a great resource. So how's your first day been?
Busy. It's a whirlwind for sure. Some of it, you know, administrative, obviously, but incredibly informative. And again, as I say, that the warmth and the enthusiasm, I just didn't expect.
I'm sorry we didn't give you heads up we were going to do this today. It was just a surprise.
Oh, no, that's
decision.
All right. Marty said, hey, we'll do a podcast. I'm like waiting for questions and some kind of preparation.
We don't do that. No prep.
I see that. So spontaneous from the heart. So
yeah.
That's great.
Now, you did something amazing this last weekend. Tell us about that.
The Trans Tahoe Swim Relay. So it's Lake Tahoe in California and Nevada. So if for those of you who don't know, the state line between California and Nevada goes straight down the middle of Lake Tahoe. And so there's this annual swim. It's been on for, I want to say, almost 40 years.
What's the size
years.
Of Lake Tahoe? Is it like the Indian Ocean? Like Gulf of America?
It is a oblong body of water that's about 28 miles long and about 11 to 12 miles wide. So we swim the width. It's six swimmers.
That's the 28, not the
long. Right. So some solo swimmers have tried to swim the 28, and many don't make it.
Really?
It's one of the toughest open water swims, not only because it's that long, but it's also at 6,300 feet altitude, so it's high, and the water temperature is fairly low.
So how low? I'm a Florida girl, so I can only swim in warm water.
For those of you on the Fahrenheit, it's low 60s. It's 63.
Okay.
But you know, you're starting the race at 48 degree ambient air temperature, so you know you bring warm clothes and plenty of coffee.
So. Yeah.
Wow.
Now, I know exactly what it's like. I run to the tip of Mount Everest every month. Something I just like to do as a hobby. So I know exactly what it's like, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. How did you get into swimming like that?
You know, it's very interesting. So I restarted my career as a swimmer at about 40. I swam in high school, very competitive program, and 1 year in college. And then, you know, what happens when you hit these milestone birthdays, like 40, which was 1980, I got back into swimming just for health. And actually what happened is my first son, my oldest son, was 4 years old, and I was teaching him how to swim. And then I decided to swim a few laps, and I just felt, I felt horrible. So I said, I got to do something. So I got back into training and then competition. And then I was in a venture capital group, pitching to start my first company, Threshold. And the guy basically, one of the partners said, basically, you have to come swim on my team if you want funding.
Wow.
That's basically kind of what he said.
Wow.
And it wasn't quite that harsh, but it was implied, certainly.
It's quite a skills test for funding.
So that's how it started, and I loved it. And then I've been with many of the members of the team for a little over 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. That some years we end up having to, you know, I mean, COVID was a rough time, and there was some, you know, there's only about 2 or 3 years over that period we did not do the race.
Wow.
And just to make sure it's clear, I swam on that for, since, you know, the early 2000s up until 2023. We've won it a total of 9 times over that period of time. And then I opted to try to go out on top. And so now I set the whole thing up. I drive the boat. I organize it. But I passed on the captainship to a friend and colleague that's been with me on that race for 20 years.
Wow.
Have you found your new training pool in White Oak, Maryland?
You know, what's really interesting and wonderful, and this is the way the swimming community is, I've had several people within FDA reach out to me and say, you know, hey, glad you're here. I swim too. And so I felt like that was going to happen. It tends to happen.
Do we have a swimming club? Do we need to start
one
now?
No, there are local master's programs.
Okay.
But I'm going to find out more from some of the FDA employees who reached out to me for sure.
Wow, and that was all today they reached out. Because
exactly.
I guess last night or this morning it became public.
Yes.
And incredible swimmer, sailor, drug developer, scientist, inventor, academic, teacher. So pretty impressive. What skill set did God withhold from you?
Well, that's very complimentary. I really appreciate it. I think the number one thing that, you know, I need to work on is motivating people. I think, you know, that's the one thing that's most important, I think, coming here, and dealing with large groups of people. So. And many people that I have to, you know, manage underneath me, because I've started companies and I usually have turned it over to someone else when it got to a certain size. La Jolla Pharmaceuticals was probably the largest, about 600 people. Maybe the principles are the same, but, you know, I think I have to be comfortable in that larger role.
Yeah.
Can I ask, so, you know, you have such a phenomenal career, right? And you've done so much, but coming here is very different than what you were doing before. I'm sure it's a lot of sacrifice, both, you know, for you and your family, moving cross country, all of that. Why did you agree to accept the job?
Well, I'll tell you, he's sitting right across from me, okay, for sure. Okay, and I'm not blowing any smoke there. So I met Marty last October at the Stanford conference that Jay Bhattacharya put on. And I was very impressed. And then when Jay was nominated, came out to D.C. to prepare for confirmation, I came out too and was helping him. And, you know, by, you know, just proximity, met Marty. And I one night we were, the three of us were having dinner. I looked at Jay. I said, Jay, you know, I'm more suited for FDA than NIH, for sure. And then Marty and I were talking, and I just really gained a massive amount of respect for you, Marty. And you know, Courtney, my wife, could see it, and she said, you have to do this. So I listened to her. I've known her for 40 years. So when you have somebody like that, you just got to listen. But I don't think there's anyone else necessarily that I would have stepped out of what I was doing. While I was teaching at Stanford, you know, I was really semi-retired. And, you know, I was chopping wood at our place in Colorado and sailing. And so, you know, it is a sacrifice, but it's the most wonderful and easy decision I've made, really, in my life.
Wow. Well, we're so glad you're here. I was wondering if he was going to say it was the talk of the farmer's market now twice a week that really closed the deal. But sounds like there are a lot of reasons, and people at Cedar are very excited about you being here.
Thanks.
Have you seen our gym?
I did go by there, but I didn't see the pool yet.
Okay, I'm not sure we want to show it to him because...
Do we have a pool?
No, we don't have
a pool. Okay.
But I was going to say, I'm not sure he'll be in his office if he sees a gym and a pool with the same, you know, high-quality facilities that we have here.
Very high-quality facilities. It's very nice. Yeah. So, yeah.
So I have to ask, so if I remember correctly, you've kind of brought, is it 7 FDA-approved drugs to market, right, throughout your career? What are you most excited about now? What do you think the FDA's opportunity is from all the things you've learned and through that process and kind of what the future holds?
You know, so over that 30-year period, I've seen a lot of changes in FDA. And, you know, I'm a little bit of a student of the history of FDA. And what I can say is the FDA has evolved and improved over time, and certainly over that 30 years. And so to say we need to improve FDA does not imply anything negative.
That's right.
Okay. It's a wonderful agency. It is the backbone of the health of Americans. My experience has been incredibly positive from the sponsor side, but I've also seen growth and improvement. And so I think there's more to grow and improve. And that's, you know, improving just the efficiency of the process. Improving the communication with the outside, homogenizing things so that one sponsor doesn't hear one thing and another thing when they're working on the same disease state. So the point is this, that FDA, as great as it is, like anything else, can be improved. And I've seen a massive amount of improvement, and I'm hoping that I can be a part of even more.
It is kind of cool on the listening tour that we've been on with drug makers and CEOs, we hear those themes, consistency, reliability, communication, and modernization of the agency. So we have opportunities that we've just never had before because of technology and other things. So this is an exciting time for the agency to modernize. And you're exactly right. It's not a statement of criticism of past performance. It's just saying we've never had this opportunity before. We never had opportunity before to do big data post-market surveillance and bringing in AI and trying new pathways and innovating with gene therapies such that we can have a plausible mechanism pathway so that a baby KJ can get the gene therapy. And that kind of is right up your alley, the whole baby KJ story, because of your background in both neonatology and oncology. What's it like for you to hear that the FDA adapted its regulatory process to enable a in utero baby to get a gene therapy such that as a newborn, and the therapy was shortly after birth, I believe, but the diagnosis was in utero. Then they started working on this gene therapy, as I understand it. And then here you have a discharge from a hospital after a gene therapy that, you know, did not result in any complications that we know of so far.
It's amazing. The, you know, progress in not only the diagnosis, but the therapy for heritable genetic diseases is stunning. I mean, we, you know, when I trained, we did not have the tools to even diagnose. Most of the genetic disorders were diagnosed mostly through a combination of doctor analytical skills, lab tests, and some specialized tests. But, you know, when I trained, we didn't even have really genetic analyses. I mean, to think it's come to that point where you not only know the targeted genetic, sometimes a base pair mutation, and correct that is phenomenal. The challenge is that that's a lot of work for one patient. So we have to somehow be able to generalize that. And there's always going to be a balance between hard empiric evidence and clinical evidence. It's a challenge, and in larger populations, of course, you need to demand the strong, you know, irrefutable data of statistical and clinical significance. But there's going to be times that judgment has to come into play, especially for very small populations. So that's to me a fun balance, because if you look through the history of medicine, many of the great breakthroughs were by a single case study that was, you know, diagnosed and treated in a way, and that led to great breakthroughs for large populations.
I mean, Sanjula, when George and I had conversations, not with any intentionality, but just, you know, talking about science and regulatory science, I was really impressed at how he would talk about common sense, right? There's a lot of reforms that just stem out of common sense while maintaining gold standard science. So obviously he's got impeccable credentials scientifically, but thinking about things with a new lens, with a fresh perspective. And in general, people here at the agency have told me that when there's been a vacancy at a job at the FDA, historically, 9 times out of 10 or 9.5 times out of 10, it went to an internal candidate. And now it's a little bit more like 50-50. And so I think there's value in the incredible institutional wisdom of folks that have been here and know the process. That is incredibly valuable. But also there's value to fresh new perspectives and fresh ideas.
Right, but with context, right? I mean, you were familiar with the organization and the agency just from a different point of view, and you kind of answered my question for you, Marty, right? Like, what attracted you to George? What were you looking for? And I have to say, as you're building out your team, I mean, you really have a credentialed bench of people across the country, wide expertise, and it's really cool to bring those perspectives together to tackle these big questions.
Yeah. You know, it's just sort of, I remember chatting with George about some of the biggest controversies of our day. And I just remember George just sort of approaching these issues with such an open mind, because you can tell in conversation who's got very strong opinions, who's listening, who's open-minded. And I personally think what makes somebody a great scientist, a great physician, a great leader is their willingness to adapt their view as the data evolves and show some humility. So that's, I would say, that lead characteristic.
Little did you know that dinner was really a job interview then, huh?
I didn't think so.
Well, I certainly never felt that way. I think that it was a wonderful evolution of a collegial and collegial relationship and a friendship at the same time. And that's a great thing to walk into in a new position, to have somebody that you trust. You trust their judgment, you trust their personality, you trust that you're fundamentally thinking about things in a framework that's similar, so that you're not going to get sideways with each other. And that's ultimately was the deciding factor, because Courtney would say, you know, boy, yeah, Marty's a really wonderful guy. I've listened to some of the way you talk, and I haven't heard you this excited or this sort of, you know, engaged in something for a long time. Even, you know, as I got to build the MTRAM program, the translational medicine program at Stanford, you know, she witnessed a lot of that. I loved it because I loved teaching, but it still wasn't the same. I didn't have somebody to, you know, bounce ideas off of that, you know, while you're not exactly the same way, you don't want people to think the same way, but you approach things in the same way.
Yeah, and I think you'll find a very academic tone here, a sort of open civil discourse. And that sort of discussion of ideas is very invigorating, very much like a university. And we want it to feel like an academic culture here for those that where that's important to them.
It really is. I actually just got a great email this morning from one of our staff here who was saying just even through these conversations, you know, she was learning a lot and really enjoyed that. You know, she's like, I'm learning so much. And I was like, wow, I'm so glad you shared that. And so I'm excited to have you on more often and we can talk about some of these interesting topics.
And I will say one thing I remember about George very distinctly is this guy gets stuff done. Like we asked him, since he has this neonatology training, about the infant formula issue. And man, not only did he was incredibly responsive, came back with literature, citations, summaries, tapped other experts, and suggested names for The Infant Formula Roundtable, which we had, was extremely successful. Really, the world's top infant formula experts. And they didn't have to agree on everything, but we heard from all of them. And we heard common themes of common sense reforms that we have to make in that infant formula space. So I just remember George just got things done so fast. And I found out later he gets up at like, what time do you get up at, like 3 a.m. or something?
Yeah, well, it depends, but yeah, roughly, pretty early.
Seriously.
Do you have like a morning ritual?
No, but it has been swimming. And, you know, because swimmers traditionally get up very early because you only can fit so many people in the pool.
Right.
And, so I'm sort of conditioned over time. And then, of course, doctors tend to get up pretty early, too. So I do get up pretty early.
I was just joking around about the 3 a.m., but I think
it's
pretty
like
close.
It's true.
It's not that far.
3 a.m. Something tells me you probably wake up that early, too. So.
Well, I go back to bed, though.
Well, I know I have so many more questions, but I want to be mindful of time, especially it being day one. But maybe we could end around where you started. You know, Marty, you mentioned it's an interesting combination of clinical specialties you have. So why did you choose those two specialties and enter medicine?
So I love them both. My PhD is in cancer biology. So, you know, I was trained, you know, from a scientific standpoint. And I mentor was a immunology stem cell person, and he really sort of started the field of stem cells as a generation of cancer, which is now kind of mainstream. And I worked on the transformation of bone marrow stem cells by a leukemogenic virus called the Abelson Marine Leukemia virus. So I really had that scientific background, and so I was going to destine. I mean, everybody's like, okay, you got to go into pediatric oncology. And kind of when I did a rotation in the NICU, I loved it because of the intensity of it. I do like the intensity of that. It's a very numbers oriented, it's very action oriented. You get immediate results. So when you resuscitate a baby, when they come out, you know, without a heartbeat, and you resuscitate them and then you see them through till they go home, it's a pretty special feeling. Just like it is also special to, you know, admit a, you know, five-year-old little child with acute lymphoblastic leukemia and watch their progress while they, you know, mature and are cured. And it's amazing. I'm now getting emails from parents and patients that are, you know, the patients are now in their 30s and 40s and they want to reconnect. So it's a very rewarding field. But actually how it happened was I was accepted into the very prestigious bone marrow transplant program up at University of Washington in Seattle. And I went up there in the thick of winter, and it was so miserable. It was just like I could not do it. And I came back and said, I'm not going. And the head of hematology oncology at Stanford said, well, you can't come into this program this year because that, you know, the principals up there I know and love, and they'll think I recruited you, and now they're short a person, so you can take a year off. So I decided to do neonatology.
And how so then generous of him to give you a year off.
Yeah. And then they and everybody worked together to allow my schedule to work to do both. So and I ended up doing some degree of specialty in newborn malignancies. So Down syndrome's patients are oftentimes born with acute myelogenous leukemia. There's a lot of blood cell disorders. So anyway, it happened kind of out of chance, but I love them both areas.
Wow, so much to learn from you. I can't wait. Looking forward to working with you.
So impressive, George. We're so glad you're here. So many people have already come up to me, told me they had a chance to meet you. They're so excited about you. So welcome to the FDA, and we're looking forward to a great new chapter here.
Thank you for having me.
All right, George. All right.
Great, thanks.
Okay, see ya.
All right,
thanks.
Bye-bye.
Great. All right, everybody, thanks so much. We'll do it again.